This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Here's Nikolai Ehlers darting in, curl back in behind the net, trying to get it out in front. He did the shot. They score. Nikolai Ehlers will open up the scoring. 32 seconds in. Theodore's shot stopped by Hellebuck. Rebound back out in front. Another stop. He absolutely robbed Paul Stastny for Bjorklund. Shot goes stop. Rebound. Line A score. It's a power play goal. Rostovic and center ice with Connor. Connor takes a pass, will get a little shot, no, he scores! 36th of the year! Far side, Morrissey walking in, trying to get it out in front, he did for Perreault, a shot, he scores! Matthew Perreault, welcome back! A power play goal! That'll do it tonight. Connor Hellebuck, step to the front of the glass, please. You have 6 shutouts this year to lead the National Hockey League, and your team has their 5th straight win at home.
4 unanswered goals by the Winnipeg Jets, leading to a 4-0 victory over the Vegas Golden Knights. A must-win game for the Jets. They came to play, and they won. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We're with you for the next 3 hours, talking all about the Winnipeg Jets, all about the Eastern and Western Conference playoff races, getting you caught up on everything to do with the NHL. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. As I mentioned, a huge win, a huge victory for the Jets, propelling them back into a playoff position.
Yeah, absolutely. And what a start, right? 32 seconds into the game. You know, I'm watching that game last night and I tweeted this out. You know, you've got Cody Eakin out there for the Jets, of course, from Winnipeg. And then you've got Ryan Reeves and Zach Whitecloud. Reeves from Winnipeg, Whitecloud from Brandon, Manitoba, former Verdun Oil Capital. Drew, you know that. And it's just unfortunate, right? Because on that goal, Nikolai Ehlers just absolutely blazes by Zach Whitecloud, mm-hmm. right? Turns him inside out. And then the goal actually goes off of the stick of Ryan Reeves, right? So, you know, just a little bit unfortunate because there was that great Manitoba content to start the game, right, Drew?
But well, the Jets fans weren't complaining about it, though.
No, and I mean, the line of Eakin Ehlers line had a really good game. And obviously, you know, the second and third period, I think the Jets as a team, there was a little bit of a lull in their game. And I think that always happens when you're up 3 goals. But, you know, the 4th goal that Matty Perreault scores there kind of, you know, towards the end of the second period. I mean, that's a killer because I think if Vegas is down 3 goals, maybe they have a chance. That third period, even though Vegas did get some chances and the Jets got some chances as well, it's really tough to come back down 4 goals, especially when you're playing against a goaltender like Connor Hellebuck, who has 6 shutouts on the year. So, you know, you got to give the Jets credit. Starts have been a problem for this team, right? Like we talked about this last week.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as of late, recent, the last, you know, 3 or 4 games, you know, the Jets have been getting the first goals of the game, but it wasn't just the first goal. Patty Laine follows that up, gives them a 2-goal lead. And then obviously the red hot Kyle Connor, you know, makes it a 3-goal lead. So the game was basically over in the first period.
It was as good a script, I think you tweeted this, as maybe somebody else tweeted it. It was as good a script that the Jets could have written for how the game was going to begin. It's a Friday night, you're at home, it's a must-win game, as basically they all are from here on out until the end of the regular season. And the Jets, you know, like you said, you know, Nikolai Ehlers gets on the board 32 seconds in, and then, you know, it's 2-0 before the game's 5 minutes over. And for a Jets team that has been slow starting all year, and I think I read a stat entering last night that the only team in the NHL that had fewer first period goals than the Winnipeg Jets were the Detroit Red Wings. So it's a perfect start for the Winnipeg Jets. And it wasn't a perfect game. You know, Vegas certainly took the play to them almost, you know, a lot of the second period. But, you know, when you have a goaltender who is locked in to the degree that Connor Hellebuck appears to be locked in right now, getting any kind of lead, not having to chase the game, a 2-0 lead for the Jets with Connor Hellebuck in net right now feels like it's a 4-0 or a 5-0 lead, just the manner in which he is, how well he's playing and how well he's seeing the puck.
Well, and you've got a Vegas team that's coming into Winnipeg 9-1-0 in their last 10 games, so they're feeling good. They're feeling good about their game, and they're riding right now. And so, you know, it's still an important game, obviously. I mean, this is a team that, you know, I believe they're starting a Western Conference road. They're going out to Calgary, then they're going out to Edmonton. So they've got some tough games within their division.
Vegas, you're talking
Vegas
about. Yeah.
And so you know, but you want to have obviously a good game to kind of get your road trip off to a good start. And I thought, to your point, Ezzy and Drew, that the idea was that you have a Winnipeg team that needed to have a good start based on the way they've been playing. And that's exactly what they did. And they were jumping. And, you know, it was interesting because inside the building, it really had that kind of playoff atmosphere feel to the game. And to your point, Drew, which you said, I think, before the game, was really is a must-win game because the teams that are around you, even though the Jets, there's a log jam in terms of points, the Jets obviously have played more games in Vancouver, they've played more games in Minnesota, they've played more games than Minnesota, than Nashville, two specifically than each one of those teams. So you needed those points. It was an absolute must-win to feel good, to kind of hopefully, from their perspective, close out the road trip with the home stand story against Arizona with another victory to kind of continue to propel yourself forward. But you know, again, like I said, I thought Marc-Andre Fleury actually played a pretty good game. He made a number of like fantastic saves to kind of keep his team in the contest. But you know, look, the Jets were relentless in that first period. I thought they really played a pretty good structured game, and again, you get rewarded for it. And I think that's kind of the thing that they needed was that, you know, and the one thing I will say is the lift they get emotionally from having Matthew Perreault back in the lineup, I think, is big. I think that, you know, he spoke about what it meant for him to get that kind of those accolades from the crowd after he scored that fourth goal that Ezzy spoke about.
Well, that's his first goal since November.
Well, yeah, but
I mean, he's been out of the lineup. No, but that's his first goal since November.
For sure. But he's been out since January 31st. Right. He's missed 16 straight games. And I'm just saying, like, he's the guy who, when you watch the games, like when you're inside the arena, he is the guy who, behind Connor Hellebuyck, leads the team out. He's always kind of yelling and screaming and kind of like energizing that Jets group up. So I just think, like, regardless of, in addition to what he does, is able to do on the ice. And I think Paul, you know, Jets bench boss Paul Maurice spoke about this after the game, kind of the emotional lift that Matthew Perreault provides, not just what he does on the ice, but what he does off the ice. And I think that kind of galvanized this group a little bit. So I think, again, with Adam Lowry close to returning, it's kind of like a perfect storm for the Jets in terms of, obviously, it's not going to be an easy way to get into the playoffs, but it's kind of a perfect storm in terms of, you know, you've got a good decor. That's as good a decor as they've had all season long.
Sure, this is the top six.
And you're really, again, you're Adam Lowry away from having your ideal forward lineup, I would think.
Minus Brian Little, but that's...
Well, obviously, yeah.
But you're right. They are getting healthy at the right time, and they're playing... You know, I think the word I would use to describe the Jets is opportunistic. You know, there's certainly some warts in their game, and it's certainly, you know, if Connor Hellebuyck is only average.
No, of course. There was a lot of slot opportunities for Vegas.
Lots.
No question.
Vegas had way more high danger chances than the Jets. Something like Vegas had just under 17 high danger
and
chances.
12 for the Jets.
12 to the Jets. You know, Connor Hellebuyck is the equalizer right now for everything this Jets team is doing.
He's the MVP.
There's no question. He's the MVP, and, you know, if the Jets get into the playoffs, he's the Vezina winner in my books.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think that's going to be the tipping point. If he gets them in there, he's going to win the Vezina. He's going to be a finalist regardless.
Yeah, you're right.
But if he gets them into the playoffs, regardless if they go out in the first round, he's going to win the Vezina. And it's the opportunity. You know, the Jets are being quick strike, and you know they remind me sort of the Vegas Golden Knights from a few years ago, in that Vegas was backstopped by Marc-Andre Fleury, particularly in the playoffs in their expansion year, where he was outstanding for them. He made all these amazing saves. And then Vegas, when they had their opportunity, they were able to strike. And that's what I'm sensing from the Jets right now, is that, sure, the numbers might not look great all the time. They looked great in that first period. In the second and third, they didn't look great. I'm talking about the underlying numbers. But good goaltending plus opportunistic scoring is a good recipe to have.
No, absolutely. It's almost like the Jets beat the Golden Knights at their own game. And the Golden Knights team is structured a little bit differently, right? Like, you know, you have Ryan Reeves out there, and, you know, he hasn't had the same impact as he did a couple of years ago with the Golden Knights, right? He's trying to, you know, you think about Pierre-Edward Belmar, who's on Colorado now, and you think about Ryan Carpenter, who's on Chicago. Like, those were good players. And one of the players that actually impressed me the most on Vegas was Nicholas Roy. Like,
well, yeah, he was excellent.
Well, he was, except for the giveaway that led to the third,
goal. But he had an excellent chance right before that,
yes,
right?
He did.
And he's a guy that was acquired from Carolina, if you remember, in the Eric Halla trade. A guy that you know, has had some good numbers in the American Hockey League. A guy who was a mid-round pick, I think a fourth rounder, but a guy that took a little bit longer. But he really impressed me. So, I mean, obviously, the Golden Knights are still led by Jonathan Marchessault, Paul Stastny, Max Pacioretty. But, you know, going back to what...
Mark Stone, of course, out of their lineup last night.
Of course.
Injured,
yeah, Mark Stone, obviously one of the best two-way players in the game, in addition to being a good Winnipeg boy. But, you know, Dave, you know, again, talked about Matty Perreault's goal. And Matty Perreault's return to the lineup is obviously huge, but it's what it does for that fourth line, right? That's because right. Nick Shore obviously hasn't produced a lot of offense. But we know that Nick Shore, you know, isn't going to be a guy that you count on to score... not only on a nightly basis, but you don't expect him to score a lot, period, right? So now, I thought, you know, talking about, you know, how Marc-Andre Fleury played in that first period, you know, Mason Appleton sauces a beautiful pass to Matty Perreault. You know, Fleury makes that big pad save. That fourth line, based on possession, based on Corsi, was actually the Jets' best line. And, you know, when you talk about Adam Lowry, it's a possibility that that fourth line could be Matty Perreault, Lowry, and Mason Appleton. We don't yet know what the composition of the lines are going to be, because even though it looks like, for the time being, guys, that Eakin, Laine, and Ehlers are going to stay together, we probably know that, you know, going forward, you know, as you get deeper towards the end of the season into the playoffs, it's not necessarily going to be Cody Eakin as your second line center. It could be Andrew Kopp. I mean, it could be Jack Roslovic, even though I personally prefer Kopp in that situation, even though, look, basically why it might be a problem going forward is just because you know that Cody Eakin might not be able to provide you with that same offense. Sure, he's reliable defensively. I just wonder long-term if Paul Maurice doesn't maybe look at putting a guy like Andrew Kopp in that position. And when you have Adam Lowry back, he can be your fourth line center. But again, all good problems to have. But I thought Matty Perreault's impact was basically felt immediately.
Matty Perreault, yes. It was good for him to get back into the game, obviously, having missed so many with the injury. Mm-hmm. It's even better for him to score a goal, because he hasn't scored one since November, like I said, despite all the injuries. I know that's the asterisk involved there. But, I mean, he was struggling before he went out of the lineup. So he comes back in. He's a boost on the Jets' second power play unit.
Yep.
He's a guy that if things aren't working and Paul Maurice needs to go to the line blender, Matty Perreault is a guy who can start the game on the fourth line and potentially move up in the lineup, just try and generate some enthusiasm, generate some chances. He's an NHL player, and that's something that on your fourth line, and that's something that the Jets have been struggling with for a lot of this year. This is their most depth they've had at their forward group in a very long time, where
I know what you're saying in terms of Perreault can move up to the third line. He can even play on the second line. But don't you want that fourth line to be similar game to game at this point in the season, right?
Absolutely.
Because you haven't seen it all year long. So I know what you're saying. That wasn't, you know, the main takeaway from your point. But I really want to see, once Adam Lowry's back, I want to see a fourth line for at least 5 games. Maybe even 10 games to end the season.
Because no question.
We just talked about, you know, a couple of years back with Vegas, Pierre-Edward Belmar and Ryan Reeves and Ryan Carpenter.
They had the consistency of playing together. Look, I agree with you.
Think about Cizikas, Clutterbuck, Matt Martin, right?
I don't disagree with you at all. I want that if that line can stay together for a consistent basis, I think that's a matchup that the Jets are going to win most nights against another team's opposition. And it's not a traditional NHL fourth line. It's almost like a 3B, I think, in terms of the skill and some of the things they can bring to the table. So, again, these are the good problems to have right now for the Jets. Problems they haven't, you know, it's been so patchwork for so long because of the injuries, because of the different things swirling around, that all of a sudden, if you're able to get 12 good forwards into your lineup and you're able to sort of develop that identity with some of your bottom six and things of that nature, this is the Jets are going to be a lot harder to play against.
How do you take Appleton out of the lineup? Like, to me, he's played so well.
Nick Shore.
He's improved so much that I don't think Appleton can come out of the lineup.
No,
I really
don't.
There's
no question.
You take Nick Shore out.
Nick
Shore is the next guy to come up.
There's no question. It's not a discussion, and it's fine. And then Nick Shore, if you need him to plug back in, so be it at that point in time.
He's an extra forward.
I know, that's what I'm saying. He's your 13th forward, and he can play that role, and it's not like you're taking a young player and you're stunting their development or anything of that nature.
No
question that Mason Appleton is a fixture in this Jets lineup
next
going
week,
forward.
Mason Appleton out.
I know, I agree with you.
That was my point.
I thought it was a bit curious.
Stealing my point?
I thought it was a bit curious of Golden Knights head coach Pete DeBoer to start Marc-Andre Fleury when you look at Robin Leonard's numbers against the Jets this year.
Okay.
Robin Leonard
for Chicago.
For Chicago, which is not as good a team as Vegas.
Right.
2-0-1 Robin Leonard went against the Jets. Yeah. Save percentages of .909. That was his first start of the year. Mm-hmm. .973 and .947. You got a goalie who's had a lot of success in this building,
mm-hmm.
and you left him on the bench in favor of Marc-Andre Fleury. Now, it's not that Fleury played poorly, because he didn't, but I thought that this would have been a star. I thought the Jets were happy to see Marc-Andre Fleury rather than Robin Leonard in that against them tonight.
Don't forget the Golden Knights are back in town in 3 weeks.
Sure. The right. final home game of the season, that Sunday game, yeah. March, 29th,
yeah.
I think?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. I just thought that it was a little curious that it was Fleury and not Leonard. I thought it would have been Leonard given his success against the Jets this year.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to watch that, Drew, because the Golden Knights, we expect to either win the division or make the playoffs, right?
Well, they should win that division, I would think.
Well, they're only a couple of points up on Calgary, so it's not a...
Yeah, they're only
up on Edmonton, three up on Calgary.
That's right. I mean, it was more of a foregone conclusion last Saturday, but Vegas has come back to the pack a little bit, and Edmonton's been playing some good hockey.
The point I was trying to make was that, if you remember back 3 years ago, Marc-Andre Fleury obviously getting the starts in the playoffs, the Penguins winning those cups. It would be amazing if Robin Leonard gets the starts and Marc-Andre Fleury is the backup. And I think there's a good chance that happens, mm-hmm. because I think there's a good point to be made that Robin Leonard at this point in his career is a better goalie than Fleury.
He's got better numbers this season.
You traded for him. If you traded for him, there's a reason.
Well, Marc-Andre Fleury has not been great this year. Right. He struggled, and that's been the big albatross for the Golden Knights so far this season, has been their goaltending. Right. And Fleury was, played fine last night. There were times.
Honestly, that save he made on Scheifele was fantastic. Mm-hmm. There are at least three or four real nice point blank stops that he made on the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was a sort of
comedy. And to be honest with you, the Kyle Connor goal is very difficult to. I mean, that's a perfect pass from Rozovic. Kyle Connor.
I think the Laine goal was a little weak in the.
Patrick Laine shot. I mean, don't get me wrong. He didn't get it off in quick. That was probably the only one that I would really qualify as.
Well, the comedy of errors on the Ehlers goal.
Sure, but that's also his forward putting the puck past him, and I mean, he may not have had the net the way he wanted, but look, at the end of the day, Connor Hellebuyck played a fantastic game, and every single player in that post game room pointed to Connor Hellebuyck.
Well, that's why the starts now for the Jets.
For the record, that could be a broken record, because after pretty much every Jets win, they point at Connor Hellebuyck.
And that's why the starts are so important. When this team can get out to a lead and they don't have to chase, they feel almost invincible with Connor Hellebuyck playing the way that he has been playing in the Jets net.
That's fair.
They do it all again Monday. It's another must win against an Arizona Coyotes team that is nipping at their heels. We'll talk about that throughout the show as well. When we come back, we talk more about the forward lines as the Jets are getting healthier. Much more to come about your Winnipeg Jets. We want to hear from you. You can let us know what you think at Illegal Curve on Twitter, 1290.90 via text message. You can send us your text. Standard messaging rates do apply. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I feel close. I'm getting better. It was nice to be able to go through a full practice and feel pretty good and get some bumping. And it's not going to be Vegas. I know that. Hopefully within the next few days we have a clearer picture of kind of when I'm going to return.
That was Adam Lowry.
Yep,
he's close to returning to the Winnipeg Jets lineup. And then there'll be a almost full health with the exception of Brian Little. And we know that's not going to change this season. So basically, when Adam Lowry back in the Jets lineup, what you see is what you get in terms of the Jets top 12.
I like this new policy of players announcing
their returns to the lineup.
Yeah, like Matthew Perreault said he'll be back. And he, in fact, said what line he was playing on. So it actually makes it easier for the media. They don't have to wait for Paul Maurice to maybe tell them or maybe not tell them. And Adam Lowry, in advance, telling people, I'm not going to be playing against Vegas. Arizona's a possibility. Well, I don't think he's at Arizona's possibility, but that's kind of the
implication.
Yeah.
If they, they're practicing today, right?
No, they're not. They canceled.
They canceled
practice.
Yeah,
so essentially the Jets have two days of practice pretty much before almost every single game this month.
Yeah.
And essentially Paul Maurice alluded to the fact that they're going to most likely cancel that first practice to give the guys rest after a game. And then they'll practice the next day. So as I anticipated, I actually wrote about that in the papers. I said they're most likely going to cancel it, but it's currently scheduled. Then they, like I think just after 8, they canceled. So they'll practice tomorrow at 11 o'clock out at the Iceplex.
And you've also got the back-to-back games next weekend against Calgary, Vancouver, right? So that's a factor. So you might as well give them a little rest, right? Now's a good time.
The schedule is soft for the Jets in terms of the pace of the games. I mean, right now they're in a bit of a quiet time in their season.
Well, they've played more games, right?
So. Right. Which is certainly something that they, I'm sure, appreciate and can use to, you know, to A, get practice time. You usually don't get practice time this time of year, and then B, get rest. So, you know, you'll rest today, to your point. You'll practice. Well, you know, it's not going to be, you know, a full hard practice tomorrow or anything. They'll practice tomorrow. They play on Monday. Then they play on Wednesday. Then they have 2 days off until they play again Saturday, Sunday, back to back. And at some point in the next few days, it's going to be Adam Lowry's return, you would think, to the Winnipeg Jets lineup, barring some sort of setback. But there's no indication that that has occurred. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So when Adam Lowry comes back, I think we're of a consensus here that Nick Shore comes out of the lineup.
Yep.
What does Adam Lowry's return mean for this Jets team? I mean, you're going to be at basically full strength on the back end. You're going to be at basically full strength up front.
Mm-hmm.
Does this Jets, do they get an extra boost with his return like you sort of saw yesterday with Matthew Perreault's return?
Yeah, I think they absolutely do, because even though Lowry hasn't maybe put up the numbers, right, I think he's at 4 goals this year.
Yep.
And, you know, we've talked about it quite a bit, even though I don't think that that's necessarily, you know, what you want to focus on. But, you know, it's not just the physicality. We know that Adam Lowry brings the physicality, but it's the options. Going back to what we said last segment, it's pretty obvious. Everybody knows that when you have Matty Perreault and Adam Lowry in your lineup, Jets regulars for, what are we talking about, the last 4 years here, Lowry even longer than Perreault, right? I mean, these are guys that have significant roles on the team. Are they top six guys? No, the Jets have their top six covered. Guys like Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler, you know, Laine, Ehlers. I mean, these guys can produce offense for this Jets team. Adam Lowry's a guy that we know can play in different situations. He's not going to go out there in the power play, obviously, but he can kill penalties, and he's a guy that can either play third line, fourth line. He can play on the wing. What I'm really going to be curious to see, because if you think about it, guys, what Paul Maurice decides to do on that second line is going to affect all the other lines. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Tanev, Kopp, and Lowry, that was your big third line for a couple of years. You know, one of the huge reasons why this team went to the Western Conference Finals a couple of years ago against Vegas, right? So if you're deciding to go with Adam Lowry on your fourth line, which I would really love to see fourth line center being Adam Lowry, and then maybe you have, you know, Matty Perreault, Mason Appleton. We talked about that last segment. But maybe you decide to reunite Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry together on your third line. I'm not sure. Jack Roslovic is an option at second line center. I don't think it's the best option for this team. And I talked about this.
Well, hang on. If you don't think it's the best option for this team, what is the best option for this team at second line center?
If it's not Andrew Kopp, it's probably Blake Wheeler. And this goes back to what I said. And I realize not a lot of people in the media are talking about this right now. But Blake Wheeler, I think, did an admirable job at center. And if you think about it, right around the time when we found out Brian Little was going to be out for the season, I'm not saying that the two are correlated at all. That's kind of around when Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele were reunited on the top line, right? So all I'm saying is, why isn't Blake Wheeler an option at second line center? Well, the obvious answer would be because Scheifele and Wheeler are playing so great on that top line with Kyle Connor, right?
Uh-huh.
But for the majority of the season, and we're, you know, this is game 70 coming up. How many games was Blake Wheeler a center? We're talking about, what, 45? 50 of those games Blake Wheeler was a center? Like, I'd have to go back and check. But for at least half of the season, Blake Wheeler was your center. Now, does he have to switch his game a little bit at center? Of course. But, you know, you go back to November and the Jets won 10 or 11 games and, you know, the Jets have been right around a playoff spot. All I'm saying is your options at second line center are limited, right? Like you don't have 10 guys to choose from. It's basically Cody Eakin, Andrew Kopp, Jack Roslovic, or Blake Wheeler.
You know, you make a valid point and I appreciate your point about Wheeler, and it makes sense when I hear you say it, but I honestly do not think it's even an option that Paul Maurice is considering.
But why isn't it an option?
I think that, you know, it was a stopgap measure, and it got to the point where Paul Maurice thought that there wasn't the benefit there anymore. That the detriment that it was having on Mark Scheifele and that the impact it was having that Blake Wheeler was having on second line center wasn't significant enough to overcome what it meant for him to be the second line, the top line right winger with Mark Scheifele.
Yeah, fair enough. So if you're not going to have Blake Wheeler back to center, and mm-hmm. By the way, I'm not saying that I expect that to happen. I just said, why isn't that an option, right?
And I think it's a valid point that
right?
you make.
So if you don't have the option of moving Blake Wheeler back to center, and I agree with you, Drew, Paul Maurice has his reasons, and I bet it's not just one or two. I bet he has several reasons, one of which, the big one, is that Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler play so well together. Mm-hmm. So you can't obviously have them playing together if Wheeler's a center, right? Because Scheifele's a center, but if you don't have Wheeler, then it's Andrew Kopp or Jack Roslovic are your options.
Besides
Cody
Eakin.
Or I guess you could throw Adam Lowry in there, but at this point, I don't think Lowry's an option.
I think that's...
So you're limited. So now you're basically down to two guys.
Well, and Cody Eakin.
Well, but he's the second line.
Right. I say to replace Cody Eakin, potentially. Right. I think that right now, the way things are going and the way the Jets have been playing as of late, and sure, a lot of that is because of Connor Hellebuck, I think that Paul Maurice is quite content, and I don't know that this is necessarily the right answer, but I think he's quite content with continuing to have Cody Eakin up the middle on that second line center. And I mean, you know, has he been great in that role? No, I wouldn't say he's been great. Has he been average? Probably average would be the word I'd use, but I think just Paul Maurice is happy with the way his forward lines are producing at the moment, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jack Roslovic's a center.
I agree.
And Jack Roslovic is a hell of a passer.
Yeah. You saw the pass from
Connor. I've seen it since. I mean, that's what he is. He's a facilitator.
Yeah.
That's 100% his game. He's not a goal scorer. He's never been a goal scorer. You go back to his college days. You go back to his AHL days. He's always had more assists than goals.
Mm-hmm.
So Jack Roslovic, I don't know. Like, again, defensively, I mean, Line A's been very good defensively. So I'm not going to
You saw the back check yesterday.
We've seen it all season. I'm not going to malign Patrick Laine's defensive game.
Mm-hmm.
Nikolaj Ehlers, more of a commitment to defense, I think, this season than we've seen. Personally, I mean, again, it's a little late in the season to be trying it, but I got to tell you, I can only imagine what those three could produce potentially with a guy passing to shooters like Laine and Ehlers
mm-hmm.
with the vision of Jack Roslovic. So I'm not saying it's going to happen because defensively he might not like the idea of giving up that much mm-hmm. from his second line, but I got to tell you, that to me... Moving forward, I mean, we've talked about Jack Roslovic being the heir apparent to Brian Little at second line center.
Mm-hmm.
The thought process was it would either be next year or the year after. I mean, I don't know. I think if you really want that second line to really get going, I would think that a player with Jack Roslovic's skill set would really mesh well with Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine.
I tend to agree with you that I would like to see Jack Roslovic with a longer leash. Mm-hmm. At that second line center role mm-hmm. to see what can occur. I think you know what you have in Cody Eakin.
Yeah.
And I don't think you yet know what you can fully produce with Jack Roslovic as a center between Laine and Ehlers. And maybe Paul Maurice waits until Lowry's healthy and then he can reunite Lowry and Kopp at that point in time
right.
and get things going at that point. But you know, and change things around and everything else. But I would love to see Roslovic with a longer audition at second line center.
Yeah.
When we come back, we'll ask Mike McIntyre his thoughts about the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets 4-0 victors last night over the Vegas Golden Knights. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090, where standard messaging rates will apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Mike McIntyre. Mike, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Always a pleasure.
Always. Are you following along with the Breyer tiebreakers this morning, Mike?
No, not directly. I'm paying a little bit of attention to what my buddy Jay
Bell
is covering. But, yeah, it's quite the... it's kind of like the Western Conference standings, right? A big logjam, if you will, of teams, multi-team playoff tiebreakers. So I guess just like the NHL, the Brier has a lot of parity as well.
That's a good analogy. I like that. Yeah. I mean, putting you on the spot like that, and you with the quick retort. That's always good there, Mike. Obviously, a huge win for the Jets, 4-0 last night at home against the Golden Knights. Another in a session of must win games for this Winnipeg Jets team. The way they're playing, or the way in particular Connor Hellebuyck is playing, you know, when this team gets out to a lead, do they almost have this feeling of invincibility right now, given the way Connor Hellebuyck is just playing incredible goaltending?
Yeah, he's not just a great goaltender. He's also a great fisherman, as we saw.
That was a good celebration. Angler. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the confidence in Connor Hellebuck's game, I mean, it's palpable, right? And clearly the players are feeding off it. You know, I look at early in the game last night, and, you know, the Jets, in a way, I thought they played a great first period, but they still gave up a number of real quality chances. But Connor Hellebuyck made all the saves you'd expect, and then probably a few that you wouldn't. And just like that, it's a 3-0 lead, and the Jets are off to the races. And Vegas must have felt kind of defeated that they had a decent push, and to come out of that down 3 goals, you're thinking, my goodness, what's it going to take? And as it turns out, they wouldn't be able to solve that question because they couldn't beat him at all on the night. Little help from his post, but I'm sure Connor Hellebuyck would say that that's all he gave him to shoot at. Usually that's what goalies do say when that's the case. But yeah, I mean, he's just absolutely on top of his game. 6 shutouts now to lead the entire NHL, and you know, when you look at the schedule coming up here and how big the games coming up are, you really wonder, are they almost just going to ride him out for the whole stretch here? And it would mean, you know, close to 70 appearances, which would be incredible. But the schedule allows, I think, to play Hellebuyck really heavy down the stretch here. And that's what you want, right? I mean, I think the Jets last night, in my eyes anyways, that was about the deepest lineup they've rolled out all season. Adam Lowry, of course, is about to return as well to make it even deeper. So you want to be playing your best, and you'd also like to be icing your best this time of year. And certainly when you're talking about the goaltender, there's very few, if any, that have been better in the National Hockey League this year than Connor Hellebuyck.
You know, Mike, I don't want to be a Buzz Killington right now and fixate on that second line, especially when, you know, Patty Laine and Nikolai Ehlers were so good last night. But last segment, we were talking about this, and it almost, you know, brings you back to 2 years ago before the Jets acquired Paul Stastny, who, of course, they faced last night. And, you know, that discussion of, you know, who should be their second line center. When you look at, you know, Cody Eakin centering Laine and Ehlers, do you see that being a line that can stay together for the rest of the season going into the playoffs? Or do you think that, obviously, there's intangibles there, and it's going to depend on, you know, how things go and how that line's producing. But do you still think right now Cody Eakin is the best option there for Paul Maurice?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sold on that, guys. And I do wonder, I'm very curious to see when Adam Lowry comes back how this all shakes out. I see a couple different ways you could go. You could move Andrew Kopp up to that spot. Between Laine, I think Kopp and Laine have played very well together at times when they've been together. So you could move Andrew Kopp, have Adam Lowry slide into the third line, and then move Cody Eakin down essentially to what would be a very deep fourth line. I mean, I thought last night the fourth line the Jets rolled out was probably the best fourth line they've had all year in Shore, Perreault, and Appleton. They had some great chances. Matty Perreault gets the power play goal, of course. But I thought they played very well, and it has to give Coach Paul Maurice a lot of confidence to have a fourth line like that. So maybe Cody Eakin, you know, I would think it's Nick Shore who comes out of the lineup as long as everybody stays healthy once Adam Lowry's back. The other option, of course, and I find this one sort of intriguing, is the idea of reuniting, you know, Lowry, Kopp, Perreault as your third line, and then having a fourth line and keeping the top two as you have them right now, which would include Cody Eakin with Ehlers and Laine, and have your fourth line be Jack Roslovic between Jansen Harkins and Mason Appleton, the class of 2015, which was a pretty effective third line there a few weeks back. Imagine now if because of return to health, that's your fourth line. So those are kind of the two ways I see it going, and I'm not sure which way Paul Maurice is going to lean. But yeah, the Eakin does seem to be a little bit miscast in my eyes in that role, but I get the logic behind it, I suppose. You've got two really offensively gifted players in Laine and Ehlers, and so you have a guy who does have some scoring touch. He's only 1 year removed from scoring 22. Granted, he has just 4 this year, but he also has the defensive awareness. So it's a similar mindset as having Andrew Kopp there. I would just argue that right now in this season, Andrew Kopp's probably having the much better season than Cody Eakin. So you wonder if maybe there needs to be a change there. But I suppose at the end of the day, as long as the team's racking up the points, it's a matter of having balance across your entire lineup. And right now, I think the Jets have some real depth, some real balance.
All I know is I heard Mike say the class of 2015 line. I thought he is absolutely right. Whatever he says, 100%, he's right.
Dave blacked out after the rest of that comment.
Yeah, I actually stopped. I couldn't hear anything else, Mike, after that.
I tried to push the ELC line, playing off the old TLC line,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I do like class of 2015. That I have to tip my hat, Dave, to you. I think that's probably the better moniker there if we do see them stick together.
Now he's going to be insufferable. Dave's going to be insufferable for the rest of the show. He's going to make us call him Mr. Minook from now until the end of the broadcast, Mike. Look what you've done. Look at the can of worms you've opened.
Wouldn't it be great to see that line if they stay together or if they get put together, come out in like a cap and gown, and then when they score, they throw their caps in the air?
Somebody's been watching too much wrestling.
You know, Mike, we've seen the recent pairing for the last couple of games of Dylan DeMello and Josh Morrissey. DeMello's obviously played 8 games now with the Jets. What have you seen from him so far since the and how soon do you think Kevin Cheveldayoff is trying to get him inked to a multi-year deal?
Yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 words, guys. Sign him. I guess 3 words. Sign him now. Dylan DeMello. I find myself every game now that I watch him play on multiple occasions, just sort of quietly saying to myself, you know, wow, what a great play. His ability to calmly, smoothly exit his own zone, often under intense pressure, is something to see. He seems to make all the right decisions, and he's just so, he's so methodical about what he does. And so in a lot of ways, you don't notice him, which is kind of a real credit, I think, to what he's doing. To me, he's exactly what this blue line needed. And, you know, I would be trying, I'd be on the phone, Cheveldayoff, I'd be on the phone with his agent every day trying to find out what it would take to get his name on a long-term extension. We know the Jets are going to have some money to play with this summer. I'm not suggesting they massively overpay, but I would be making a very generous offer because, to me, he's exactly the kind of guy that should be part of this team's core going forward, quite honestly. It's only 8 games in, I know, but I've seen more than enough of him to suggest that he's a great fit for this team. And I think pairing him with Josh Morrissey is absolutely perfect. I think we're going to see Josh Morrissey's game sort of maybe return to where it has often been in his young career. I think we would all agree he's probably struggled at times this season. Part of that, though, probably has to do with who he's been paired with, that he's had to be the mentor to a guy like Tucker Poolman at times, maybe almost playing overly safe, overly cautious. A guy like Dylan DeMello, I think, will allow Josh Morrissey to return to what he does best. And I think the trickle-down, guys, is Tucker Poolman, to me, is a perfect third-pairing defenseman. Mm-hmm. I really like Tucker Poolman's game, and maybe some point in his future he could be a top 2 or top 4 guy. But to me, I mean, Beaulieu and Poolman on your third pair is absolutely perfect. I go back to what I said about the fourth line. I'd say the same thing about the third pairing. It just to me, that's as deep as the Jets have been all year.
Mike, are you at all worried that the Jets are going to have to put out a parental advisory saying you have to be 18 years or older to watch Dylan DeMello play hockey with Paul Maurice saying that that's coach's porn?
Yes. And you know, I could see why a coach would feel that way, because they, of course, as much as we tend to notice little things, that they focus, hyper-focus on that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I mean, he is a coach's dream in that sense. And, you know, it still boggles the mind, guys, that the Ottawa Senators could only get a third-round pick for him.
Yeah, that it does indeed, Mike. Last question for you. You know, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about the Jets' penalty kill as being historically awful. That was the phrase we actually used on this program. Is that the most stunning turnaround of this entire Jets season, the way that that penalty kill has gone from an albatross to a strength?
I think so. And the fact that, you know, they've done it without Adam Lowry in the month of February was obviously the huge turnaround, right? I mean, they were 31 for 33 with one shorthanded goal. So they were a minus one for an entire month until they ran into Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on Leap Day last weekend and gave up the two. But still, even minus three for the month, I believe that was in 15 games. I mean, that's pretty incredible. They added a shorty earlier this week as well. Like, they're almost breaking even when they're shorthanded over a long stretch. You're closing in on, you know, a quarter of the season. And for where they were at to where they are now, a momentum killer to a momentum gainer. You know, I obviously the addition of guys like Eakin and DeMello have helped. I think Nick Shore's done a really nice job actually on the penalty kill. I talked about him probably being the guy that comes out. I don't think you take Jansen Harkins or Mason Appleton out of the lineup with what they've brought. So to me, it's probably Shore, and obviously Adam Lowry would return to his penalty killing role. And your goaltender, as the old saying goes, has to be your best penalty killer. But, you know, I think the Jets have been a lot more aggressive on the PK recently. They're not just allowing the easy zone entrance, the setup, and kind of settling into the very passive box where they'd allow way too many shots, some of which would get tipped or deflected or rebounds. Now they're making it a lot harder on teams to get established, and I think that's really been a difference maker. So credit, obviously, the coaching staff for making the needed adjustments, and for the players for embracing some change and really making the most of it.
Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you later on, or we'll see you at the rink tomorrow and then again on Monday.
You bet, you guys. Take care.
Take care, Mike. Thanks so much. When we come back, we talk about Monday's opponent, the Arizona Coyotes. We'll preview that game. We'll look at the Western Conference playoff race. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
It's a two-goal lead for the Coyotes. There's the in-tight chance for Jack Roslovic. Connor throws it to the front of the net, but Richardson wouldn't let Shankly get to it. At the empty net off the post.
That was back early in the year, October 15th. The Coyotes with a 4-2 victory here in Winnipeg. It's the last time these two teams met. They'll, of course, meet on Monday, October 15th.
Wow.
Yeah, going way back in the archives.
Winnipeg versus Winnipeg.
Winnipeg versus Winnipeg. Yes, the former Winnipeg, the 1.0 beat the 2.0 4-2. That was the last time they met. They'll meet again on Monday. And then, of course, the final game of the regular season in Arizona. Time will tell to see what that game counts for, if it matters a lot, if it matters a little, if it matters only to one of the two teams. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So we look at the Arizona Coyotes as they come to town on Monday, coming off of a loss last night in Calgary, another sort of must-win game, as all these games are, and they gave the Flames a good battle, but not enough. They lose in regulation, and they fall 2 points behind the Winnipeg Jets in the battle for the final Western Conference playoff spots.
You see the chance that Nick Schmaltz had at the end of the game?
I haven't seen the highlights, no. What did I miss there?
Well, he just had a glorious chance in front of the net. He put it between Cam Talbot's legs, and it went just wide. But, you know, unfortunate for the Coyotes, right? Because, you know, they're coming off of the wins over Buffalo and Vancouver.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're starting to play better hockey. And then, you know, Calgary's also playing really good hockey. I watched the game between the Flames and the Blue Jackets, and the Blue Jackets got out to a 2-0 lead.
There was only 10 minutes left in that game, right, until Calgary tied it up.
Matthew Tkachuk is playing so well. I mean, we know he's one of their top players, and I mean, they've got a lot of talent there. Obviously, they've had, you know, some injuries and some issues with depth scoring, but I mean, I know we're going to get into this here, Drew, but, you know, it's unbelievable to me that you have 7 points between, pardon me, less than 7 points. You have seven teams, I think, that are within, what, 5 points? If you look at Vancouver, between Vancouver and Minnesota, right, you have 5 points, do you not?
No, between Vancouver and Minnesota, you have one point.
Sorry, not Vancouver, Minnesota. Who's the
Calgary? Calgary has 79.
Calgary and
Edmonton has 80. Yes. Edmonton has 80. That's who you're thinking of.
Though the second team... No, but, sorry. I was thinking of Chicago.
Are we going to do charades? Are we going to do charades on the radio right now?
No, I was thinking the difference between here. I could pull it
Chicago's
up here,
done now. Chicago lost last night to Detroit. So I know that they're conceivably only 6 points behind the Jets, but they're done. You don't lose to Detroit and bounce at this stage in the season and bounce back. So Arizona has 74 points. Vancouver is in wild card spot,
Edmonton,
number one.
Edmonton, between Edmonton and Arizona, it's six points.
Yeah.
I said five.
No, I don't even know what you said. You were speaking some sort of gibberish.
It's not 2 points. Even look at Vegas. The difference between Vegas and Arizona is 8 points.
Yes. Okay.
So the
difference
between the top team in the division and Arizona is 8 points. That's crazy.
And the way I'm looking at it is you have five teams battling for the final two playoff spots. I'm not even looking at Calgary and Edmonton right now. I think even though they are only 3 points ahead of Vancouver for the...
it's three central teams and two Pacific teams.
That's right. I mean, I'm not even looking at the Pacific division, the top three in the Pacific.
Vegas could be a wild card team.
They could. Yes, absolutely they could.
So how are you not factoring that in?
Because from a Jets perspective, I'm only looking at at the wild card
race. I wasn't talking about the Jets. I was just talking about the conference.
Okay, that's fine. But I'm saying right now, if you look at it, it's Winnipeg and Vancouver tied wild card spots number one and two. Nashville and Nashville's a point. Pardon me. Minnesota's a point behind them, and Nashville and Arizona are 2 points behind them. Minnesota's got the Kings and the Ducks back to back this weekend on the West Coast. Nashville's got Dallas today in the second half of a home and home after they beat Dallas on home ice on Thursday. It's going to flip and flop basically every single night, depending on the results,
all the way till April.
Yeah, I just don't see anybody falling out. I mean, that was a bad loss by Arizona last night. I mean, but you're on the road and it's excusable. You're playing against
an unfortunate loss. They were in the game.
Right. And they just needed to get that game into overtime to make it a 3-point game. They weren't able to do that, as you mentioned.
I would suggest Jets fans are very happy it was not an overtime game.
Absolutely they are. And then that's why Monday's game is so huge. If the Jets are able to take advantage of home ice on Monday and defeat the Coyotes, well, all of a sudden there's 4 points between those two teams. It's the proverbial 4-point game on Monday night against the Coyotes, and that's why it's yet another must-win game for this Winnipeg Jets team, a team that's actually been playing much better on home ice. I don't think they've been getting the credit as of late.
Five in a row?
Yeah, for how well they've been playing on home ice.
They're all must-win, and I think if you look at the standings in 2 weeks, you're going to have five or six teams that are within 3 or 4 points.
Yeah,
so the only way anybody separates themselves is if you win five or six games in a row.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, like, you could look at, like, sure, Nashville beat Dallas last game. They're going to play Dallas again tonight. I realize that, you know, that's not necessarily the best matchup for Nashville. But, you know, when you look at the strength of schedule, and if you go on NHL.com, they post the strength of schedule, the Jets have the hardest schedule. Of all the teams we're talking about, Arizona actually has the easiest. But when you're talking about, you know, hardest versus easiest, you're talking about, you know, 570 winning percentage opposition teams versus 530. So I don't think that that's going to necessarily... You have to win the games. We talked about it when there were 15 games left. The Jets were probably going to have to win 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. So now you've got 13 games left, so that means you're going to have to win 7 or 8.
That's right. They've won the two games since last Saturday when we talked about it. And that's all they can control is what they do one game at a time. I mean, Minnesota, this is a key weekend for Minnesota. You know, is it a dead cat? Are they in the midst of a dead cat bounce with the hiring of Dean Evason, and that's why they're playing so well? Or are they truly turning a corner and becoming a better hockey team? You know, we'll know more, I think, these games against the Kings and the Ducks, and they already started it off well, beating the San Jose Sharks team. These teams that they're playing against certainly aren't as good as they are, but they have nothing to lose at the same time. So the Wild having the back-to-back against the Kings and the Ducks, we saw that Toronto couldn't take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. You know, the Leafs lost to the Kings and the Ducks back-to-back, which is, you know, incredible, you know, for... Yeah, that they're solidly in a playoff spot because the Florida Panthers can't do anything to get themselves going.
You know, you talk about the dead cat bounce. When Bruce Boudreau was fired, the Wild were what, within 2 or 3 points of a playoff spot?
Yeah, they weren't. It's not like
so
they
it's
were.
Like people are talking about like as if the Minnesota Wild were 20 points out of a playoff spot, and all of a sudden, like, this isn't a St. Louis Blues situation. The Wild have been there all year long. So, you know, for me, it's Kevin Fiala's goal scoring, and it's. We should be talking about how well Alex Stalock has been playing, yeah, right? So the Wild have been there the whole year.
They have, and you'll know more. They might be in a playoff spot as of, I think it's an afternoon game in Los Angeles today. So they might be in a playoff spot by dinner time again, and the Jets would then fall out of that playoff spot by virtue of the fact that Vancouver has played fewer games than the Jets have. It's going to be scoreboard watching season. It's going to be a battle. We'll keep it. And the Jets have to take care of business Monday night against the Arizona Coyotes, a game, of course, that you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we talk more about those Coyotes with Craig Morgan of The Athletic. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website for the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, he covers the Arizona Coyotes. We're pleased to welcome to the program Craig Morgan. Craig, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
The morning after, the night before, a hard-fought but ultimately fruitless game between the Coyotes and the Flames. The Coyotes coming so close to sending it to overtime, but they're not able to do it. They lose 3-2. From your perspective, how damaging of a loss was this to the Coyotes' playoff hopes?
Well, it feels like every loss is damaging to the Coyotes' playoff hopes now. The games this time of year, of course, are going to be tight, and they're not going to win all these games, but I think the damage was done probably a little earlier in the season when they went through that slump in January and even into February. They lost some games against teams that they had no business losing to. Of course, Darcy Kemper was out, and that impacted them, but everybody goes through some injuries. They just didn't take care of business in some key games earlier in the stretch when they had built a little bit of a cushion, and now they are in the predicament they're in.
Craig, Taylor Hall had a really nice goal last night, and you know anybody can look up Taylor Hall's stats and you know see 27 points in 34 games, and that's pretty good. But has he had the desired impact that John Chyka wanted him to have on this roster?
I think so. I know there's a narrative out there that the Coyotes haven't played well since Taylor Hall came over, but I don't think that's the way to frame the issue. I think the way to frame the issue is wondering where the Coyotes would be without Taylor Hall at this point because they've had such trouble. There were a lot of times where they were a one-line team, and Taylor Hall was on that line, and for the most part it was with Christian Dvorak and Connor Garland. They've broken that up now, but he has been pretty consistently driving offense. Hasn't had the ability to finish recently, but he got that goal last night. You know, he's been talking a lot about his inability to put the puck in the net all season, and that's bugging him. But again, he's been one of their best players on a consistent basis since he came over.
You know, Craig, the Coyotes, I believe, have allowed the second least second fewest goals in the Western Conference. Is that a team collective defense, or is it the goaltenders playing well, or is it a combination of the two?
It's definitely a combination of the two. They certainly have crafted an identity around being a defensive team. They got elite play, of course, from Darcy Kemper for most of the season and for good stretches from Antti Raanta as well. They've got a very good goaltending tandem, but it is their identity. And part of that is crafted because they don't have those elite guys up front. They don't have really a true number one center, and that's been a problem for this franchise for a very long time. They don't have the elite finishers on this roster, even though they thought they got one when they got Phil Kessel in the offseason. So they have to play that style to be successful.
Craig Morgan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Craig covers the Arizona Coyotes for TheAthletic.com. The Coyotes in town on Monday to face the Winnipeg Jets. You know, Craig, you look at the standings, and they certainly go back and forth this time of year. And the Coyotes come into Winnipeg on Monday, potentially only 2 points, or they're going to be only 2 points behind the Jets. You know, despite the loss last night, is that sort of what the team is pointing towards? Look, a win on Monday, and we're right back into potentially being in a wild card spot. Or tied with a team for a wild card spot?
Yeah, it has to be their focus. You can't dwell on losses. There's nothing you can do about it at that point. Of course, everyone's going to look at, you know, the games in hand that some teams still have. That gap has shrunk quite a bit now. But I think when they went into this four-game stretch where they went on the road to play Vancouver, Calgary, Winnipeg, and then they come back home and play the Canucks again, I think they looked at that stretch thinking, we need to go 3-1 in that stretch to stay in this thing. So they're certainly still alive in that, but that makes Monday's game in Winnipeg a must-win for them.
Craig, Nick Schmaltz is a player that I've always liked watching, and he obviously came over to Arizona from Chicago, and he had those injuries, and you know he just broke a 14-game goalless drought, and he almost tied the game up yesterday versus Calgary. We talked about it earlier in the show when we were talking about the Coyotes, but how would you assess his season as a whole? Because I think you'd agree that there have been some ups and downs.
Well, yeah, and it was an up earlier in the season. I thought he was terrific early on in the season. He was leading the team in points. He was creating offense, but it's been a pretty lengthy stretch here, really, the second half of the season where Nick just hasn't produced offensively. He's trying to make his game more complete because I think there have been some knocks on his defensive game, and I do think he's taken strides there, but the bottom line is with Nick Schmaltz, first of all, his role and then that extension that they signed him to, he needs to be a points producer on this team, and he just hasn't been able to do that. You know, I talked earlier about their lack of a number one center. I'm not saying that he was going to be that elite guy at the top, but they had hoped that they would get playmaking through the middle of the ice and speed through the middle of the ice from him. Rick Tocchet was really looking for that. For a while, he provided that, and then he really fell off. And for large stretches here, guys, they've moved him to the wing.
No, Craig, and then you look at this Coyotes team, and last year they didn't have a guy who cracked 20 goals, and this year Connor Garland seems to be the only player who's at that number right now. He's at 22. So it's a two-parter. Number one, obviously, where's the goal scoring coming from this team if really they want to have success and win? And how is Connor Garland producing his second season so far as a Coyote?
Yeah, the goal scoring, where it's going to come from is that's a really good question. Again, they thought they had acquired it when they got Phil Kessel, and I think a lot of people have been able to examine that situation now. Phil Kessel just hasn't been very good for them. He's looked like he's out of shape. He just doesn't look like an impact player most nights on the ice, and that's a real problem for them because he's going to be around here for a couple more seasons. Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like they need to read Phil the Riot Act and say, you can't be Phil anymore if you're not producing. So that's one step right there. Mm-hmm. But other than that, in terms of goal scoring, I mean, it's got to be a balanced effort. Again, as I said earlier, they just don't have that elite finisher, so they've got to get it through all four lines. They've got to get production. With Connor Garland in particular, he's been obviously the most pleasant surprise of this team. You know, he came up last season with all the injuries and produced, and people wondered if he could sustain that. Well, he has. I know he's in a little bit of a drought right now, but he's been an energy player, and he does something that it seems so simple, but guys get away from it all the time. Connor Garland is fearless. He goes to the net. He goes to those areas where you have to go to score goals in the NHL.
Craig Morgan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Arizona Coyotes. He covers the team for TheAthletic.com. The Coyotes into Winnipeg Monday night, another quote-unquote must-win game for both teams as the Western Conference playoff race continues to heat up. Craig, Taylor Hall is a member of the Coyotes next season, yes or no?
Boy, that's a really tough question. I do think making the playoffs is a significant part of it because Taylor really wants to win. He really wants to be in the playoffs. He obviously hasn't had many opportunities between the Oilers, Devils, and the Coyotes now. I think that's going to play into it, but they didn't make a move at the deadline, obviously. A lot of people thought they should have. They've stayed in constant contact, John Chyka has, with his agent, Darren Ferris. I've talked to Darren Ferris multiple times. They insist that it is a significant possibility that he will resign here, but you know, I have to wonder. You get to the offseason, and I do think he'll get to the offseason and weigh his options. If you have other clubs calling that have maybe that elite number one center you can play with, say Colorado comes calling, for instance, and says, how do you feel about playing with Nate McKinnon? It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to hang on to Taylor Hall if they're not in the postseason.
You talk about the need for that elite number one center. How do the Coyotes get that player? I mean, that's what every team in the NHL that doesn't have that player is trying to get. How do the Coyotes?
By and large, you got to get it in the draft.
Yeah,
and we know their draft lottery luck. They haven't had any. There are a couple seasons where they had hoped that they would be there, particularly the McDavid year where it was McDavid and Eichel, and they finished with the second worst record. Then Edmonton, of course, jumps ahead of everybody and grabs McDavid. That's where you got to find those guys. I mean, occasionally you see them traded, but it's very seldom. So you've got to draft them, and sometimes you got to find them a little later in the first round. They haven't been able to do that either. Obviously, Dylan Strome didn't pan out. They just haven't had that guy since, really, Jeremy Roenick left town, and we're talking about a long time.
Well, he's available. He's not working anymore.
Yes,
sorry.
Unemployed right now.
Yeah, a little bit of a cheap shot by me. Apologies to Jeremy.
Now, Craig, we wanted to ask you about Barrett Hayton. Obviously, he was one of the heroes for Team Canada at the World Junior. Of course, they won gold. First full-time year in the NHL, fifth overall pick in 2018. He's centering that second line right now. We mentioned Phil Kessel earlier. How's he doing? Obviously, he's someone who they view as a future star on this team. But in your opinion, how's he looked on a nightly basis?
Really, I really loved his first game. I thought he was a really effective player. I think he's just been kind of okay the last few games. I don't want to put too much pressure on a kid that's that young. It's probably not fair this time of year, and I don't want to really make any lasting judgments on him. But I got to be honest, I'd like to see something, some kind of offensive contribution in terms of production from Barrett Hayton. I mean, they still envision him being a guy who is at the top of their lineup. They want him to be that number one center. I'm not quite sure he fits that mold. He may be more of a number two, the 200-foot guy that they can drop a little lower in the lineup, but they envision him being more of a points producer, and I just haven't seen that spark yet. It'd be nice to see something before the end of the season to make you believe that Barrett Hayton could be that guy.
No, Craig, not necessarily for this season, but the Tucson Roadrunners are the number one team in the Pacific Division. Are there players that the Coyotes are looking at, again, not for this year, but for next season, to really bring up and help out?
Well, I would say by and large, it's depth guys. That's what's going on in Tucson. I don't think they have any high-end players, really, that are there, other than maybe in goal, where Ivan Prosvetov, one of their two goaltenders, they're really high on him. We'll see how he develops, because we know the sort of the development arc of goaltenders takes a bit longer. I wouldn't say there are any real high-end players. Kyle Capobianco on the blue line might come up and help him. There are a few forwards that might help him, but again, it's more of a depth role. Really, their best prospects are a couple guys. One guy, Jan Jenik, who is out injured right now, was hurt at the World Junior Championship, and of course, Victor Soderstrom, their number one draft pick, who's playing in Sweden now for Brynäs. He may be over here in North America next year. Those are probably the guys to watch.
Last question for you, Craig. I don't know if it's fully qualified as a gate, but let's call it workout gate. How serious, how much of a concern is this within the Coyotes organization? How serious is this going to impact the franchise whenever the NHL finishes its investigation?
It's so hard to discern, guys, because obviously a lot of people aren't talking right now. The ones you do talk to, you get two different sides where you hear there's nothing of concern whatsoever, and then you hear people telling you, oh, yeah, there's a lot more there, there's a lot more there. I have tried to pin down those particular sources. Okay, what in particular is there? And I've never gotten a specific answer as to what happened with the Coyotes. So we just have to wait for this investigation to play out. It could take a while, when you get attorneys involved. Who knows how long this thing will take? It doesn't seem like there's any rush on the league's part. There's no update. I've been checking in regularly. So it's really hard to say what the punishment will be. Will it be just a slap on the wrist and maybe a fine for a couple of things that were a little out of bounds? Or did they go way beyond where you're looking at potentially levying draft picks against them or even somebody losing their job? I have to wonder, if it gets to the point where you see multiple incidents, is Gary Bettman really willing to levy a massive fine against Alex Morello, mm-hmm. a guy who just bought this team and really rescued one of the league's most troubled franchises? I can't imagine that Gary would want to do that, so they might have to find some alternative form of punishment if it comes to that.
Well, that's something certainly to keep an eye on to see how that's going to play out. And, of course, the entire playoff race that the Coyotes still find themselves right in the midst of. Craig Morgan covers the Coyotes for TheAthletic.com. Recommend you subscribe. You can read his work there. And, Craig, we'll see you on Monday at the rink. Enjoy your time in Winnipeg. Thanks so much for joining us.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks again for having me.
Take care, Craig. Craig Morgan of The Athletic joining us from Calgary, where he'll be on his way to Winnipeg later on this morning as the Coyotes will be in town on Monday to face the Jets, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we're going to talk about Dylan DeMello, his future with the Jets. Should the Jets be trying to get him under contract before he becomes an unrestricted free agent? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In the system now, I think 5 games or so now at least for you.
Yep, feel good. Every game, just feeling more comfortable, and it's been a good fit. I feel like I've been playing really good hockey, and you know, it's a fun team to be a part of. I think it's a really good group on and off the ice. It's a good group of guys, and yeah, it's been a good fit.
Winnipeg Jets defenseman Dylan DeMello talking about his fit as a member of the Jets' blue line. A lot of people clamoring, including our guest in the first hour, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press, clamoring for the Jets to try and get DeMello under contract before he becomes an unrestricted free agent on July 1st. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall.
Had an Illegal Curve sandwich last Saturday after the show, and I hadn't had one in a while.
Yeah.
I think I ate it in maybe 30 seconds.
You just swallowed it whole like a duck?
And then I went to sleep for the next 12 hours.
No chewing. And then you went to sleep for the next. Yeah. Then you went and hibernated, basically.
More of a snake, by the way, not a duck.
Well, ducks don't chew. I think first of all, I'm using the Simpsons reference. It's a Simpsons reference where I think Lenny and Carl describe Homer as chewing, as eating like a duck because he just swallows the food without chewing.
It was very new Simpsons versus old.
No, old Simpsons. I don't really watch new Simpsons. Yeah. I haven't seen an episode of the Simpsons in probably, I don't know, 15 years. It's definitely
it's
an old
season
Simpsons.
45 right now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's an old Simpsons reference. I can probably dig in a little deeper if you want to find out more.
Don't have a cow, man.
Wow, that's going way back there, Ezzy. Oh, excellent. You know, back, what was that, 1994?
Oh, yeah, early 90s, man.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about Dylan DeMello. Was he born in 94 when that?
93.
Well, there you go. So he doesn't know that reference.
He does not.
In any event, you know, the Jets acquired him from the Senators at the trade deadline. As we all recall, is almost universally praised as a great addition by the Jets, and
for a minimal cost.
And a lot of slings and arrows were sent the way of the Senators organization for losing him for that price. Have you seen enough that the Jets should be re-signing Dylan DeMello? And if so, what would you be comfortable in handing out to him in terms of years and dollars?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, right? Like, Dylan DeMello is a guy that still doesn't have a goal this year. Like, how many defensemen are we talking about with no goals that we praise this much, right? And it's because of how good he is. And it's, you know, as a former defenseman, maybe, obviously, you know, not very
good.
You're
going to talk about your own defensive prowess right now? Let's go ahead.
I did play midget A1 for Varsity View, Drew, so, and I was the first pick of the Jewish B League, so I don't want to, get too into my accomplishments. But when you're talking about, you know, Dylan DeMello, I mean, this is a pure defensive defenseman. Like, obviously, he's a guy that can chip in a little bit of offense, but I mean, this is a guy that is a shutdown defenseman. And what have we been talking about all year long? The Jets need a better shutdown defenseman. Like, they have been clamoring for a guy like Dylan DeMello. So, yeah, he's making $900,000 a year. He's a pending UFA. Like, unless you guys can come up with a reason why the Jets shouldn't sign DeMello, I'd like to hear it. But, like, to me, this screams like 3-year, 4-year contract. Like, I don't know what you end up paying him. Like, I haven't looked at the comparables. Like, I don't know if he's a $2 million defenseman, if he's a $3 million a year defenseman. Maybe he's even a $4 million a year defenseman. I really don't know, but I would have absolutely no problem using the money that you're currently paying, like a Dmitry Kulikov, to give to Dylan DeMello. Obviously, you know, we don't know if he's going to be, like I said, a $4 million a year defenseman, or if he's going to be more around $3
million. But
the point is, DeMello is a top four guy. He's a guy you can put in your top four, and he could be a shutdown defenseman, whether you put him with, you know, Josh Morrissey, or maybe, you know, next year, Ville Heinola is a guy that you pair him up with. But the point is, I think in a small sample size with the Jets and going back to his years and the way he played with the Ottawa Senators, I mean, that's why everybody around the league, guys, was saying that it was such a steal for the Jets, because I think even some people thought that a team might give up a late first rounder to get Dylan DeMello. Like, some people thought DeMello was the best defenseman available on the trade market when you're talking about all-around game, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, Andrew Berkshire wrote about DeMello a couple of weeks back for the Free Press, and, you know, he was talking about those things like stick checks and, you know, play in his own defensive zone, all of those types of stats, and that's why Paul Maurice called it coach's porn, because Dylan DeMello is the type of guy that basically just thwarts any offensive tack in his zone. So he's just a good stand-up defenseman, and I think he's a perfect candidate to be re-signed.
Dave?
No, I'm 100% in agreement with Ezzy. I think he's a guy, if you look at the Jets, right, what do the Jets have in terms of defense next year? They've got Josh Morrissey. They've got Neil Pionk.
Yeah.
They've got Tucker Pullman, and they've got Carl Dahlstrom. That's it. Those are the four defensemen they have for next season.
Yes.
So you
technically Dustin Byfuglien too, but yes.
Yeah, and Sammy Niekus an RFA.
Sure.
So you got, but your right side, because you've got Dylan Sandberg, who we're going on the presumption that he'll sign once his college season is done. So he's a left side guy. We also don't know if he's going to play for the Moose next season or the Jets. Mm-hmm. You got Ville Heinola, who, as you just mentioned, another guy who's going to play on your left side.
Mm-hmm.
So your right side is the question mark, right? So you've got Tucker Pullman, again, who I think right now is ideally suited in that third pairing role.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Sammy Niku, who, you know, given that if he's healthy, can play in that second, third pairing, maybe up in the top with Josh Morrissey, depending on how his adjustment is going. But you don't have that, especially, I mean, again, if you look at the Moose, you've got Leon Gavanke, and you've got Jonathan Kovacevic, two young Jets prospects. You've got Declan Chisholm, who's still playing junior. So you've got some guys who are coming up, but they're probably not ready for that jump to the NHL next year.
I'll just point out now,
yeah,
because you didn't say Logan Stanley, which I think says a lot about Logan Stanley's development.
Logan Stanley is also a left side defenseman.
I know. I'm sorry, but I'm just saying.
I know, but I'm talking about the right side specifically.
Sorry. Okay.
No, and Dave makes a good point, though. Like, right now, with DeMello, Pionk, and Pullman as your top three right side defensemen, like, to me, that's good. Is it Byfuglien, Myers, Trouba? No.
That's not going to happen again.
Well,
I mean, most teams never have a Byfuglien, Myers, Trouba right side.
But I'm just saying, if you put Pionk and Pullman and DeMello up against, you know, Byfuglien, Trouba, Myers.
Sure.
You would take Byfuglien, Trouba, Myers.
No question.
But I don't think it's that much of a step back. And I would be perfectly fine if that's your right side next year. And then Sammy Niku obviously is a wild card. But you have to think, guys, that with Dustin Byfuglien's cap space, Chevy's going to be able to acquire another defenseman.
Plus Kulikov's money coming off the books.
Right? I mean, Chevy's going to have options. So, I mean, not all of these guys are going to be back. There might not be room for all of these guys.
And I did a post on this just to show, like, based on what the NHL, Bill Daly, deputy commissioner of the NHL, said this week, said that the salary cap for next year, the projection, would be anywhere from, like, 84 to 88.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, looking at what the Jets have spent on for next year, allocated already, it would basically leave them with about $18 million. And, you know, of course, they still have some players assigned. They've got the RFAs. I went through that on the website. You can see it at illegalcurve.com.
Yeah, like Jack Roslovic is probably the biggest.
The entire class of 2015 has to be resigned. Yep. They're all RFAs, right?
So Connor. Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course. But I mean, like, Roslovic and Harkins and Appleton and Niku. But I'm just saying, specifically from the defensive perspective, if you've got, as you just illustrated, DeMello, Pionk, Pullman, Niku. It's a good right side.
Like, you're good there.
Yeah, you're good there.
That's a good right side. I don't know if it's the best right side in the league, but it's a lot stronger than it was prior to acquiring DeMello, right? Like, that's why that move. Again, I don't know if this team is going to win the Stanley Cup. So that's not how we're going to judge this, but acquiring DeMello was really the perfect move for Chevy, because when you consider his age, like, he's not, like, no offense to Alec Martinez, but Alec Martinez is much older than Dylan DeMello. He's not a guy that you're going to sign to 3 or 4 years. So Chevy acquired a guy that you can also re-sign to 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is. Like, I don't think they're going to give DeMello a six or seven year contract.
DeMello, but, who turns 20, he turns 27 on May 1st.
Like, he's in his prime. Like, the numbers tell you that a defenseman's prime is, you know, 25 to 29, something like that, right? And so DeMello is in his prime right now, so he's a perfect candidate to be re-signed. And, you know, that defense is looking really good right now. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Is it as good as, you know, teams like Boston or, you know, Tampa Bay or St. Louis? I don't think so, but it's also not as big of a weakness as it used to be.
And then, especially if you move at your left side, if you re-sign one of Kulikov or Beaulieu, you got Morrissey, you got Heinola, you got
Sandberg,
you got somebody that you re-sign on your left side. It's a defensive core.
You'll want to get a veteran guy, of course, because that's a young core.
Yeah.
So you'll get a veteran. You sign a veteran. I mean, look, we haven't even talked about a guy who potentially could come back to Manitoba, Travis Hamonic.
Well, yeah,
I'm just saying, like,
doesn't. I don't think if they re-sign DeMello, I don't think there's room for Hamonic.
But I'm just saying.
You're absolutely right. Options. And he's fit in well, and that's a good thing for the Winnipeg Jets, particular as they play out the next, you know, 13 or 15 games of the season and try and battle, scratch and claw into the NHL playoffs. When we come back, speaking of a team scratching and clawing to the playoffs, that's the Columbus Blue Jackets. They've been one of the best stories in the NHL all season long, despite a litany of injuries. We'll talk to Jody Shelley up next about the Blue Jackets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.